Okay, let's start a little early today because there were a lot of questions about that last example I did last time. The example was to find two constants, a and b, such that a certain combination of sine and cosine satisfies a certain differential equation. So, last exercise or last example. From Wednesday. I'm not going to copy the whole thing, but there was a differential equation that you were supposed to solve, but solve in an easy way, in the sense that you were given a candidate for a solution, and you have to find the corresponding constant. So it looked like that. So here was the differential equation, dE was this one, y double prime plus y prime minus 2y equals sine of x, and then a candidate for a solution was this function, y equals, I think it was a sine x plus b cosine x. The question is, what should a and b equal in order for this function to satisfy this differential equation? So find a and find b. And then what we did was this. This function satisfies a differential equation simply if, when plugged into it, you get an identity, some trivial identity of the form 0 over 0 after you simplify. So we plug this into the equation. We regroup the terms. We collected all the sine terms and all the cosine terms. And what we got was this. So let's see if I have that somewhere. Yeah, we got something like minus 3a minus 1 minus b times sine x, then plus a minus 3b times cosine x equals identically, meaning for all values of x, equals sine x. And then I was running out of time, so I only said equate the corresponding coefficients to get two equations for a and b and solve those equations. Okay? So that seemed a little too magical for some people, so let me explain it a little bit better. How one can do this very concretely. So notice that this means that this is true. This is supposed to be true for all values of x. So in particular, we could take x to be, well, what are the smart choices for x? Well, see, if we could somehow make sine or cosine disappear, right, then, for example, if you make sine disappear, then cosine has to be plus or minus 1. So this simplifies vastly. So for example, to make sine disappear, you could say, let x equal 0. That will certainly make sine disappear. So we plug in this value of x. This becomes 0. This becomes 0. Cosine of 0 equals 1. So that gives you one equation, which is a minus 3b equals 0. Okay? That was our second equation, in fact. But now if you want to eliminate cosine from the equation and keep sine, we can plug in another value of x. What value do you suggest to keep cosine in, to keep sine? Pi over 2. Let's take x equals pi over 2, the simplest one. Of course, these are not the only choices. Essentially, almost any two values of x that you plug in will produce a system of equations that can be solved. But these are the simplest choices. And if you plug in pi over 2, here's what you get. Well, sine of pi over 2 is 1. Cosine of pi over 2 is 0, so you get minus 3a minus b equals sine of pi over 2, which is 1. So that was that's the other equation, which was the first equation, the way I derived them. So you have two equations with two unknowns, and I don't want to go into how to solve those. You should know how to do that. Okay? So that was the idea. The reason I did this exercise is because I want you to get accustomed to seeing differential equations. They're very important objects. You will not learn how to solve them in this course. You will learn how to solve them later. We'll talk about modeling using differential equations a little bit later. But this is just to show you how, if you make a smart, educated guess about the solution of this equation, you may actually get a solution. And in fact, we can be shown that you can find all solutions to this differential equation in this way. Okay, is it more clear now? Any questions? No? Okay. Well, today let's talk about a different issue. Let's talk about these types of questions. Question. So we can differentiate a good number of functions, but we cannot differentiate. We don't know how to differentiate functions like this. Functions like e to the power of sine x or cosine x of x squared, and functions like this. Right? They simply don't know. You know how to differentiate cosine of x alone, but not of x squared. I mean, you could try to use a definition. For example, let's try to apply the definition of the derivative to find the derivative of e to the sine x. So we would have e to the power of sine x prime, well, equals the limit as h goes to 0, you know, so the function of x plus h, so that would mean e to the power sine of x plus h minus e to the power sine x, all of that divided by h. And now if you look at this, you see that there is no obvious way to manipulate this expression. I mean, you could use the addition formula and all that, but it's not a pretty thing to deal with. So we want to avoid using, dealing with things like this. We want to some general principle that'll be able to reduce the differentiation of a function like this to the derivatives. To, you know, we want a formula that will express the derivative of this function in terms of the derivatives of the individual functions, namely the sine function and the exponential function, and here of the cosine function and the squaring function. And that type of principle is called the chain rule. So that's, I think, 3.4 officially, the chain rule. And I don't want to sound negative about it, but from now on you will be chained to the chain rule for the rest of the semester, because this is the most important rule of differentiation. But it's not a hard rule. If you do enough examples, you will see that it's easy, and you probably already know how to use it in some simple examples. So the chain rule is the rule that tells you how to differentiate the composition of two functions if you know the derivatives of each individual function. So the question is how to differentiate the function like this. Let's call it big F equal to G composed with F. Remember, this denotes composition of functions, f and g in that order, in terms of the derivatives of g, so g prime and f prime. That's the idea. That's the goal. Maybe I should remind you of the notation. So when I write g little circle f, the definition of that function when applied to a number x is just g of f of x. So for example, if you take the function e to the power sine of x or cosine of x squared, then what would f of x be? Let me do it like this. So in each of these examples, what is f of x and what is g of y? Let me denote the independent variable of g differently from that of x, of f. So what functions comprise the function e to the sine x? What do you first evaluate? Sine. So f of x is sine x. And what is g? It's e, let's say, to the y, because I'm calling the variable y. How about in this one? You first have to compute inner function, which is x squared. And then you take the cosine of that. So the second function, the outer function, is cosine of y. Okay, so let's see how we can do this. Let me show you. Let me derive this formula, at least heuristically, without worrying too much about rigor. But, you know, you can make this derivation rigorous if you wanted to. But to be able to do that, we need to re-examine the notion of the derivative, which is good. So it's always good to have multiple points of view and multiple ways of understanding the same thing. It just makes you understand better. So here's a remark about the derivative of a function. another way to see what the derivative really is. So suppose you have a differentiable function, f, and you look at f prime of x. Well, what does it mean to say that f prime of x equals a, equals some number a? Well, this means, so this is by definition the same thing as saying that that limit of difference quotients goes to a, right? So in other words, the limit as h goes to 0 of f of x plus h minus f of x over h is equal to a. Definition, nothing by the definition. But now let's do this. Let me move this a to the other side, right? And then bring a up to the numerator of this expression. So this is the same thing as saying that, so if and only if the limit as h goes to 0. Now look what happens. I could just subtract a here, right? A doesn't depend on h. So the same thing is the same thing as saying that this limit is 0. Do you agree? So that's the same thing. But now I can combine this difference quotient with a. I can bring a up here. So I need to have a times h. So what we get is this. The limit of f of x plus h minus f of x minus ah divided by h equals 0. So that's another way of seeing what a derivative is. In this case, we call it a. So that means that, you know, if you have the limit of this ratio going to 0 as h goes to 0, then certainly the numerator of this expression, the top, goes to 0. It becomes very small. In other words, the top, f of x plus h minus f of x minus a times h is approximately 0 for small h. Right? Approximately, so this means it's almost 0 in the sense that if I divide it by h, it's going to become smaller and smaller. So now if you move everything but f of x plus h to the right-hand side, what you get is this. You get that f of x plus h is approximately equal to f of x plus a times h. Again, for small values of h. Do you agree with that? So, in other words, if you knew the value of f at some point, x, let's say you know the value of sine at pi over 2, it's 1. But to find sine of pi over 2 plus some very small number, right, it's not that easy. It's a transcendental function. So if you wanted to approximate sine, the sine function at pi over 2 plus some very small number, you can do it like this. It will be sine of pi over 2 plus the derivative of sine at pi over 2 times that small number h. So this gives you a way, in other words, a derivative gives you a way of approximating a function that may be very complicated, very nonlinear, by this simple expression, by, you know, this is linear in h. X is fixed. And the derivative of f at x, the point x, is that unique number that enables you to do this. So this is the derivative. So it's the unique number. The derivative at the point x. It's the unique number with this property. So if you wanted to, you could say, I'm not going to define the derivative using the limit of difference quotients. I can just say that it's that unique number that has this property, that this is the left-hand side equals the right-hand side, well, almost equals the right-hand side for very small h. Okay? So we can view the derivative in this way. Okay, so if that's okay with you, of course, if there are questions, let me know. But now let's, with this in mind, let's try to solve this problem of finding the derivative of the composite function. Well, we could say, here's what we know. Let's assume that f and g are differentiable. Well, that means that f of x plus h is approximately equal to f of x plus f prime of x times h. So a small change in the independent variable produces this type of change in the value of the function. Same thing for g. But let me call its independent variable y, and let me call the small change in that independent variable k, hk. You know, it's just these consecutive letters. So this is also approximately equal to g of y plus g prime of y times k. Right, this is because we're assuming f and g are differentiable. And now let's look at the function big F. Big F is the composition of g and f and small f. So what is f of x plus h? Well, this is just g of f of x plus h. But look, I can write f of x plus h as f of x plus k. Right? So f of x plus h and f of x are not the same. I'm going to call their difference k. It's just the difference in the value of the function as you move x from x to x plus h. So this gives us g of f of x plus k. They're equal to each other. Right? Now look, let me think of this f of x as y. Let me use this formula here, number 2. This formula is telling you that if you change y by a small number k, and this is certainly going to be small, this k here, right? If h is small, this k is going to be small. It's telling you that the value of g changes like this, more or less. So by this second formula, this is approximately equal to, let's say it's g of f of x, because f of x is y, plus g prime of f of x times k. This is just that second formula applied applied here with y equal to f of x. Is that okay? So here we have the derivative of g at f of x. Now let's deal with this k number. Well, k is, as you can see, k is just f of x plus h minus f of x. And we saw from number 1, formula number 1, that this is approximately equal to f prime of x times h. Right? This is number 1. So let me replace k by this thing. I'm going to do it here. What we get is that we get an f. Let me go back to the beginning where I started. We started with big F, the composite function, at x plus h. We saw that this is approximately equal to this, and then if I replace k by its approximate value, which is this, we get an f, big F of x plus h, equals approximately g of f of x plus, I'm just copying the last thing, which g prime of f of x times k, but k was approximately f prime of x times h. In other words, if you remember that this is just big F of x, we have approximated big F of x plus h by big F of x plus some number here. Let's call this a times h. Okay? Now remember this previous remark. The unique number that allows you to do this approximation is called the derivative. In other words, by the previous remark, this a is exactly the derivative of f, big F at x. So what is that derivative? Well, look at the formula for a. It's g prime of f of x times f prime of x. And that's the chain rule. Okay? In other words, to differentiate the function big F, that's composed of g and f in that order, g composed with f, you differentiate that outer function g at the inner function f of x, and you multiply that by the derivative of the inner function. So let me state that as a theorem. Theorem called the chain rule. And by the way, this is a useful formula for many reasons. And if you understand it well now, you will see that in the future, if you take more math, if you take multivariable calculus and so on, the formula for the chain rule in general is exactly this formula. Okay, where g prime and f prime and mean something else if a function has more than one variable, but it's exactly the same formula. So it's a very important formula to know and remember and know how to use. So what did we use to derive this formula? We used, the only assumption was that f and g were differentiable. So if f and g are differentiable functions, and g composed with f is defined somewhere at least, then g composed with f is also differentiable. And the formula for its derivative is given there. So g circle f prime of x equals g prime of f of x times f prime of x. Okay. In different notation that's sometimes easier to remember, you could say, well, I'm going to denote the values of the f function, f of x equals y. So y is the value of f. And then z equals g of y. So think of z as depending on y via the function g. Then you see the composite function is the function z equals g of f of x. In other words, z depends on y via g, and y depends on x via f. So the question is, how do you differentiate z with respect to the bottom variable x? And this is the formula, so that you can rewrite this formula using the dy dx notation. And in that notation, the left-hand side of that formula is the composite function. So this is the function z as a function of x, right? So you write dz dx equals, on the right-hand side, you first have the derivative of g with respect to its variable at the point f of x. So that means that you differentiate, so z equals g of y, so that's dz dy, and then you multiply that by the derivative of x, of f with respect to x, which is dy dx. So the reason this formula is convenient is because it looks like you can just cancel the dy's. Of course, you cannot. This is not what the chain rule is telling you to do, because dy dx, for now, only has a meaning as a whole. Dy and dx separately have no meaning for us. We will give them some meaning later. But for now, this as a whole has a meaning, and this as a whole has a meaning. But this is a good mnemonic device, because it looks like you can cancel. And when you cancel, you get the right answer. The only downside of this formula is that it doesn't remind you that this derivative here should be taken at y, where y equals f of x. Okay? You always have to remember that, to evaluate the derivative of the outer function at the inner function. Okay, any questions about the statement of the theorem, derivation of the formula? Where? On the top? Right here? I just rewrote the formula, the definition of the derivative of a function, in a way that can help me think about the derivative as a device for approximating the value of the function at a point. We'll see later when we talk about linear approximation, the derivative is exactly the best linear approximation to a function. Okay, so if you remember what... Oh, it's under. Okay. Here? Here? I wrote that, I just temporarily called this thing K. This is the change in F. F of X plus H minus F of X. I called it K just to make my notation a little bit cleaner, easier to deal with. And then I remember that this is approximately, because F is differential, this is approximately equal to F prime of X times H. That's formula number one. One is just a restatement of the definition of differentiability. Okay? So this is a heuristic proof because, I didn't really dwell too much on what this really means, the symbol, what I mean to approximate. But this can be turned into a rigorous proof. And if you want to do that, if you're curious and, if you care about mathematics and rigor, I encourage you to do it. And the book has a proof that's similar to this one, but it's a little bit more messy. Okay, so any other questions? Yes. Why was I able to what? To do the. I just decided to do it because I wanted to think of this thing that I'm plugging into G as something plus K, something, namely F of X, plus a small number added to that. So if you do that, if you declare that F of X plus H simply equals F of X plus H, right? This is a correct way to think about F of X plus H. It's the change in the value of the function F produced by a small change in the independent variable. So since F has to be continuous, being differentiable, a small change in X will produce a small change in F. So you only, this is only going to be slightly different from F of X if H is small. And that difference, this is K. And that difference will be called K. I just call it K. That's all. It's just a temporary letter that I introduced, the letter K. Okay, other questions? Well, then we better apply this formula to see how it works in the examples that I, let's just apply it to, e to the x. So let's let big F of x equal e to the sine x. Of course, we have to remember what the derivative of e to the x was, but that's not that hard. So what is F prime of x? Now, remember that we can think of this as the derivative of g composed with f of x, where g of y is e to the y, and f of x is sine x. We notice that. So let's now apply the formula to see what we get. Of course, I'm only going to do this once or twice. After that, I'm not going to always state separately what f and g are. So big F prime of x is, well, you have the derivative of the outer function. The outer function is the exponential function, e to the y. What is the derivative of that? It's just e to the y. Well, remember, this is y. It's sine x. And then times the derivative of sine, which we now know, it's cosine, right? Cosine x. E to the y, you don't want y to stay there. You want everything to be in terms of x. So this is just e to the sine x times cosine x. Okay. It would be incorrect to write e to the x times cosine x, because you need to evaluate the outer function at the inner function, which is sine of x. So it's e to the sine x. All right? Second example was... there, F of x was cosine of x squared. So we saw that g of y, the outer function there as a function of y is, what's the outer function? It's easy to see. It's cosine, but I'm calling its variable y. So cosine y, and the inner function f of x is x squared. Okay, so the derivative, let me write it d dx of cosine of x squared equals, it's the derivative of the outer function of cosine, which was minus sine of y, times the derivative of the inner function, which is just 2x, of course. But again, y, we don't want y in the final answer. Y is just x squared, so the answer is minus 2 sine of x squared times, actually minus 2x sine of x squared. Okay. All right. Let's see. Instead of doing some routine but more complicated examples where you have to differentiate some quotient of which you take the square root, I think you can practice it in your discussion section. You can figure it out yourself. Let's do something that's more interesting, like this. Suppose you have an even function. What do you think about the derivative of that function? Is it going to be even or odd? Why? There's no exponent, but there's a minus sign. But also, if you just want to check using one example and generalize from that example, you could say, well, cosine is even, its derivative is minus sine, that's odd. Okay? So let's try to show that the derivative of an even function is odd and of an odd function is even. So, exercise, part A, if f is even, and of course differentiable, show that f prime is odd, and B, if f is odd, show that f prime is even. Okay, and I want you to try to do that while I'm erasing the blackboard. Okay. Does anybody want to come to the blackboard to do it? Yeah? It's a good exercise in public speaking. You will need that. Many of you will. No? Okay, well, let's try to do it together. So, solution. Okay, let's start with an even function. So suppose f is even. So what does that mean by definition? F of negative x equals f of x for all x. So I like to use this symbol, identical equal for all x. I don't want to write for all x. This just tells you that. Well, if they're equal for all x, and f is differentiable, that means the right-hand side is differentiable. Is the left-hand side differentiable? Sure, because we've only composed f with the function that sends x to minus x, which is certainly differentiable. What is the derivative of that inner function here, the derivative that sends x to minus x? It's minus 1. So let's simply differentiate both sides. If you differentiate both sides, what do you get? Well, on the right-hand side, of course, you get f prime of x. But what do you get on the left-hand side? So you differentiate using the chain rule. You get what? You get negative f prime of negative x. Why? Because you differentiate the outer function, which is f, at minus x, at the inner function, and you multiply that by the derivative of the inner function, which is minus 1. I just wrote this minus 1 here. And now if you move this minus 1 onto the other side, which is, of course, possible, you get an f prime of minus x equals, identically, minus f prime of x. Why is this? Why do we have this identity here? Well, if two functions are identically equal, the derivatives will be identically equal. That's pretty clear. And this is the definition of an odd function. So that means that f prime is odd. And part B is completely analogous, so I'm going to skip it. Okay? Now, let's see. So remember that I still owe you a better formula for the derivative of the exponential function, except for the natural exponential function e to the x. Right? We know that the derivative of e to the x, that e to the x prime equals e to the x. How do we know that? Well, we figured out, here's what we concluded, that the derivative of the function a to the x, if it exists, and that's the rub, that we don't really know how to prove it exists, but if it exists equals some constant times the function itself. And this c is exactly the derivative of a to the x at the point 0. We concluded that, if you remember, a while ago. And then we said, well, if we vary this base of the exponential function a, if we make it bigger or smaller, this derivative, being the slope, will vary. This is the picture. So c is nothing but the slope of this tangent line at this point. And then we said there will exist exactly one number for which the c is equal to 1. And we decide to call that number e. So essentially, by definition, this is true, because that's how we define the number e in lack of a better way. Okay, so we take this for granted now. E to the x prime is e to the x. Up to multiplication by a constant, this is a unique function that has this property. Okay, now, but what about a to the x prime? So what is this constant c equal to in general? And some people conjectured that it's ln a. And now let's see why it is ln a. So you can actually prove that using a simple trick. And this trick will stay with us for the rest of the semester. It's the trick that when you have a difficulty with an expression like this, you take the ln of that, and then to not to change anything, you exponentiate. In other words, you take e to ln of a to the x. Okay, this doesn't change anything because the exponential function and the natural log function ln are inverses of each other. But the ln function has a nice property that it transforms exponentials into products. So what is this thing in the exponent? What is ln of a to the x? It's x times ln a. Right? In other words, I should have a prime, right? I need the prime. I'm trying to differentiate this. And now look, we have the derivative of e to the power x ln a, where we know the derivative of the exponential function. So if I continue here, and if I use the chain rule, which is not a surprise, what is the derivative of this composite function? What is the outside function here? It's the exponential function, e to something, e to the y. What is the inside function? This thing. So let's differentiate the outer function, right? Add the inner function. Well, that's just e to x ln a. Now let's multiply this by the derivative of the inner function. Well, this is an easy function, x times a constant, where the constant is ln a, so it's only ln a. So what that gives us is, remember that this was just a different way to write a to the x. So it's a to the x times ln a. Summarize, a to the x prime equals a to the x times ln a. Okay, so we finally have that formula. Let's see. Questions? Okay, let's do another exercise that's somewhat challenging, but not too much. That would be number, I don't know which number, it doesn't matter, exercise. It's, I think, 51 in the book. It says, for which values, let me call it 1, for which values of r is just a real number, does the function f of x equal to e to the rx satisfy the differential equation? Let me just write dE. Or maybe this is similar to a problem in the book. I don't remember, but I think I just cooked it up. The differential equation is y double prime minus 3y prime plus 2y is equal to 0. Okay? So for which values of the real number r, which doesn't depend on x, will this function, e to the r times x, satisfy this differential equation? And by that, we mean that when, you know, choose an r, or maybe there's more than one, such that when you plug e to the rx in here, you get some trivially satisfied identity, like 0 equals 0, after you simplify. So, okay, while I'm erasing the board again, I would like you to think about this and work on it. I guess I have enough board space, so I'm not going to erase. So remember, the goal is, or the what we need to do is simply plug this function into the equation. And for that, we need the first derivative and the second derivative. So what is the first derivative of this function, f prime of x? Well, again, we need to use the chain rule. We have the exponential function as the outer function, and r times x is the inner function. Yeah. R is a constant. Okay. In other words, we are sort of guessing solutions of this differential equation, hoping that this type of a function will work. And this is something you'll be doing in Math 1b, and later maybe if you take Math 54. So if you differentiate e to the rx, what do you get? Chain rule gives you r e to the rx. What about the second derivative? Differentiate again, r is a constant, r squared e to the rx, right? Plug those into the equation together with y, which is just e to the rx. Okay, by substitution or substituting into the equation, we get, so the second derivative was r squared e to the rx. Then we have minus 3 times the first derivative, which was r e to the rx. And then we have plus 2 times the function itself, which is e to the rx. This is supposed to equal, for all x, equal to 0. So the left-hand side is supposed to equal 0 for all values of x. Okay, now let's factor e to the rx from the left-hand side. Clearly we can do that because each term has e to the rx. So e to the rx times r squared minus 3r plus 2 is supposed to equal 0 for all values of x. Okay, when can this happen? The product of two numbers is 0 if and only if at least one of them is 0. This one is never 0. E to the rx is never 0. Okay, so this must be 0. So the conclusion is that for r to work, we need r squared minus 3r plus 2 to be 0. Let me write that under this equation. R squared minus 3r plus 2 equals 0. Do you see a similarity? The second derivative of y corresponds to the second power of r. The coefficients are the same. The first derivative of y corresponds to the first power of r, and the zeroth derivative of y corresponds to the zeroth power of r. Okay, remember that. Now, what are the solutions of this equation? 2 and 1, or 1 and 2. Okay, so the conclusion is f1 of x equals e to the x, and f2 of x equals e to the 2x are solutions to this differential equation. We know that because we, you know, essentially plug these functions into the equation and we got a trivial identity, 0 equals 0. You may ask, what are other solutions to this differential equation? And it can be shown that every solution of this differential equation is a combination of these two. It's a constant times the first plus another constant times the second. That describes all of the solutions. But I'm not going to go into that now. Okay? Any questions, comments? All right, let's do another example like this. Let's find the thousandth derivative of the following function. That would be example number, I don't know, 2 or whatever. So find the 1,000th derivative of the function f of x equals x times e to the minus x. So we dealt with something similar to this previously, but this has e to the minus x in the, you know, the second function is that. So let's see. We clearly don't want to differentiate 1,000 times. We want a formula, a general formula. And it's often that's often the case in mathematics and science. Instead of solving a particular problem that you need the answer to, you solve a more general problem, and then you just take a particular value, you know, you just apply to your particular problem to find the solution. So let's find the general problem of finding the nth derivative of this function for any n. For that, we need a pattern, to find a pattern, as we differentiate once, twice, three times. And when we find the pattern, ideally, we would prove that that pattern is true using mathematical induction. There won't be any time for that, but let's at least find the pattern. So what is f prime of x? What rules of differentiation do we need to find the derivative? We need the product rule and the chain rule, because you need the chain rule to differentiate e to the minus x. Right? E to the minus x prime would be what? Minus e to the minus x. Okay, so by the product rule, we get e to the minus x, differentiate the first function, leave the second alone, and then minus x times e to the minus x, which I can write like this. Let me factor e to the minus x. This chalk would work. And then let me factor a minus sign, so it's minus times x minus 1. So minus x minus 1 times e to the minus x. A lot of minuses. Okay, let's differentiate again. The second derivative of this function is the derivative of the first derivative. So let's differentiate this first function, which is just, you know, 1 minus x, or minus x plus 1. So we get minus e to the minus x. And then, now let's see. So I leave this function alone, the first one. And then I differentiate the second function, but that differentiation will produce a minus sign, which will cancel this minus sign. So we have plus x minus 1 e to the minus x. Let's factor e to the minus x out again. What do we get inside the first function? We get x minus 1 minus 1, which is x minus 2. Let's do it one more time. The third derivative will be the derivative of the second derivative. If you differentiate x minus 2, you get 1. So it's e to the minus x, and then plus x minus 2 times this derivative of e to the minus x. Well, I may as well put a minus sign in front of the whole thing and get minus x minus 2 times e to the minus x. Now let's see, if I factor e to the minus x and minus 1 out of the whole thing, I will get, let's see, x, this is 2, plus 1 is 3, but I factored the minus sign out, so it's actually minus 3. And you can see why I'm doing it this way, factoring this minus 1 out, because I already did this problem, I did my homework, and I know the answer, so I want you I want to help you find the pattern. So what do you think should be the formula for the nth derivative? It's going to be plus or minus 1, right? But which one is it? Exactly. Minus 1 to the n times x minus n times e to the minus x. Now, how do we know this is actually true? Because we only have three examples to generalize from. Use mathematical induction to prove this. And then go and have a good weekend. Okay? See you on Monday.